For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT shop is now open at tntradio.live. In 1620, the Pilgrim Fathers and the Mayflower set sail from Plymouth to explore the New World. More than 400 years later, Darren from Plymouth explores today's New World. Darren from Plymouth is D.D. Denslow, and he's digging deeper on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to TNT Radio. Yes, this is me, D.D. Denslow, on Digging Deeper. And my guest before me, a certain Mr. Graham Taylor, he did giggle when he heard my intro. And I boast about it at the beginning of every one of my shows because I'm in competition with a certain Rick Munn to have the best show intro. His, of course, talks about leprechauns. So what we got coming up on the show for you today over the next 2 hours, I will be with you until 2 p.m. So first up, yes, I have got author and writer Graham Taylor, a frequent guest on Jeremy Vine, no less, and recently had a blockbuster interview in which he spoke out against the WhatsApp messages and the psychological operation, probably a term that has never, ever been said on Jeremy Vine's show until Mr. Graham Taylor said it. So I'm really, really looking forward to my chat with Graham. We had a chat on Friday just to discuss what's coming on the show. And if there's anything I took away from our conversation, Graham, is that you're an incredibly interesting person. And I genuinely am looking forward to speaking to you. And then coming up at 1 o'clock, I've got my friend and honorary Plymouthian Danny Bamping to come on and talk about the Plymouth Tree Massacre, as it has been known, come to be known. This has made headline news up and down the country. In fact, this has been reported as far afield as other countries across the pond. And it's a sort of quite a deeply distressing story for my city. I was hoping to get the Straw Campaigners and Nick Kelly, the leader of the Plymouth Independent Alliance, on to talk to me about this as well. But unfortunately, it is Mother's Day. Well, fortunately, it is Mother's Day. And so they have a genuine excuse for not coming on and being grilled by me. So to all the mothers out there, congratulations. Well done. Keep the hard work up and keep being a mother. Okay, so my first guest is with Graham. And we will probably start off with the audio that I'm about to play, but I quickly got a definition of psychological operations, or PSYOPs, as they're known in the tinfoil hat community. They are operations to convey selected information and indicators to audiences to influence their emotions, motives, and objective reasoning, and ultimately the behavior of governments, organizations, groups, and individuals. So that's a definition of the PSYOP. And I noticed this morning, there's another one that our government are putting out. It's everywhere at the moment, all over social media. I'm sure Graham has seen it as well. And that is, there's going to be a planned emergency siren alert on our phones in April. In fact, it's happening Sunday, April the 23rd. Now, this is a test of emergency alerts in the UK government service that will warn you if there's a life-threatening emergency nearby. In an actual emergency, follow the instructions in the alert to keep yourself and others safe. This one that's happening on Sunday is a test, so you don't need to take action. And you can imagine what's going to happen on Sunday. 99% of the population have no idea about this because they're not connected into these information networks that they need to be informed. Their phones are all going to start going off and there's going to be mass panic. And it's absolutely unnecessary. Why do we need the government to give us an emergency alert system on our phones? So just a bit of information. If you go into your notifications, there are settings on the iPhone at the bottom of your notifications for extreme alert and severe alert. I don't know what the difference between extreme and severe. They both sound quite bad, don't they, to the average person? But you can turn these off so that the government doesn't bother you just before a nuclear bomb lands when there's nothing you can do about it anyway. So PSYOPs, that's what we're going to be talking about. And Graham, well done for what you said on Jeremy Vine. I've got the audio lined up. We've got Esther in the studio today. So big shout out to Esther. Esther, are you ready? Can you roll the tape, please?
And I want to bring in somebody, friend of the show, Graham Taylor, who took the lockdown rules very seriously. And last night you got in touch, Graham, and you said you were absolutely disgusted.
Jeremy, I'm on the verge of tears with anger. I'm not usually an angry man, but, you know, Matt Hancock, if you're watching this, you are responsible for putting the nation into fear. I did everything you asked for. I took your jabs. I stayed in at home. I didn't go to the pub. I stopped my family life. The kids didn't go to school. Their education suffered. And you've done this. It's a psychological operation against the people of this country. Jeremy, I'm just appalled. I've always supported the government. You know, I as a police officer, I was always told to obey orders, and I did. I've done everything in life to do what the government wanted, and now I don't trust them. And, you know, the conspiracy theories of 2020 are all turning out to be true. And for Matt Hancock to say something like he will block funding for children, it's just immoral, and the man should be put before the bar in Parliament, and if not prosecuted, because this is horrendous. It goes deeper and deeper. And what will more revelations show as time and history, you know, turns on? What happened in that time? You know, I lost 2 years of my life, and I am very, very angry, Jeremy.
So had he not done his psychological operation, as you describe it, you might not have gone into the deep lockdown you went into. Is that right?
We wouldn't. We sat in fear when Boris Johnson came on the television and in his Churchillian speech, you know, said what we all had to do to save the NHS. And the NHS have been good for me. They saved my life on more than one occasion. And we thought it's our duty to do this. Yet COVID was nothing more than a respiratory infection. More people were dying of the flu. We weren't told this. We were told that this was a killer disease and many hundreds of people were going to die. And we were shown the figures every day of deaths. And yet a lot of the COVID deaths are now, you know, being told that they were from other things and COVID was maybe just a contributing factor. You know, we were told Matt Hancock would put a protective ring around old people's homes, and he didn't. He just let them die.
Okay, Graham, that was you on the Jeremy Vine show. It was a very impassioned passionate and very direct statement that you made to Jeremy Vine, who you have told me you actually know quite well on a more personal level than the average person, and you've appeared on his show throughout the pandemic period. So, Graham, welcome to the show, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good, actually, Dee. It's a case of I'm not usually that angry when I'm on the media. I've done everything from Richard and Judy right the way through Sky News. I've done the newspapers on BBC, ITV and all that sort of thing. And there've been a talking head on radio programs. And I've never been that angry. I've got to say that I just felt taken for an absolute fool, a complete dinlo. As I said in that, I'd done everything they wanted. I'd taken their jabs. I'd been sick. You know, they made me ill, very ill. And I still took them because I thought it was my responsibility. And I was sold. I was sold a lie. And when you've been sold a lie, it makes you feel even more foolish. Because now that I'm awake to these things, I've realized that people realized it was a con from the word go, from the get-go. And I don't know. I put it down to the fact that I was a police officer. And part of my training, part of the, I'll use the word brainwashing, because it is, they break you down and build you up again, was you obey orders, but you don't question them. And you trust the government. And I did. I went along with it. And I feel an absolute fool because all I've seen now, and now that I've started to research into this, I'm seeing more and more that this was a psyop. It was a psychological operation. It was an operation about test and control. And we are the fools for people like me for going along with it. And if this is the first operation of test and control, then I am sure that the government will have planned yet another one to come along, maybe within the next 2 to 3 years. And as you say, on the 23rd of April, which I think is St. George's Day, they're going to be sending out an emergency signal. And what I have found out is that if you do not respond to the text message that you are sent, your phone will be disabled until you do respond. Now, that is real control. And my suggestion to the people of this country and the world is to, on April the 23rd, on St. George's Day, do what that saint would have done and kill the dragon. Turn your phone off. Don't have it switched on. It won't come, message won't come through. They won't be able to disable your phone. And also, they won't know. This is a key thing. They won't know how many people are responding. And that will mean lack of information for them. They won't know whether the test has worked or not. So tell as many people as you can to turn off your phone so that they can't do it, because this is yet another part of the PSYOP.
Yeah, I mean, you might just be able to disable it, like I said in the op-ed. I think you might just be able to turn off the notifications so that they just can't come through. But you're right, if you do receive this message, it's going to disable your phone. And then when you re-enable your phone, there's going to be some data there that's collected, even if it's just something as simple as how quickly did that person respond to our emergency siren. And when people think, oh, why is that useful? I can't tell you why that small piece of information might be useful, but I suspect the powers that be will find it incredibly useful. So we're talking about psychological operations, and I have no idea why we need this emergency siren system in place. We've never needed something like it before. And it's concerning that it's obviously something that they might need or planned to have used in the future. Anyway, we're talking about psychological operations. What was your media bubble like? And I don't want to dwell too much on the past, because we talk about 2020 so much now, and it's 2023. And I do worry that people like me are locked into this COVID past. But what was your media bubble like that stopped you from exploring, as a journalist, what was really going on in 2020?
Well, I came off Facebook and Twitter around about the end of 2018. I just got to the point, I was having no more books coming out, so there was no need to do the dreadful promotion you have to do on Twitter and Facebook to get your books out there. So I decided to come out of that. We just bought a new house in Whitby. We were settling down. I'd had my son was born, and we just were having a family life. And I was doing my week, my column in the Yorkshire Post. I was doing my appearances on television. And really, what happened was I was researching, and I was reading the Western Chinese daily newspaper or something. It was one of those Pacific newspapers. And I came across just a small article talking about a SARS-like virus coming out in Wuhan. And this was in December of 2019. And I said to my wife, I said, we've got to watch this. This is interesting. It's not like SARS. It seems to be spreading a lot more. And it comes from Wuhan. And I said, by chance, there's a gain-of-function laboratory in Wuhan. That's interesting, you know. And it did start to spread. There was some cases in York, which was only 30 miles away from where I was. And so I decided, for the sake of my family, that we would go into our own lockdown until more was learnt about this virus. Because sometimes viruses escape from these places. You know, foot and mouth is known to have escaped from research establishments, and these things do escape. And I just thought, we better be careful until we find out what it is. So we went into our little private lockdown, and we stayed in that. We were very, very much lockdown zealots. I remember washing the shopping as it came into the house, and you can laugh at me if you want, because it's true, you know. And we were told about face masks. I got myself the best face mask on the market. This thing would stop, you know, an atomic bomb. It was like this big red sort of mask that was down to virus-sized particles. And I remember going out into a supermarket wearing this thing, looking like some sort of alien creature. And these are the sort of things we did. And I soaked it all in, you know. And then somebody said, you know, if breaking wind can't, if a thick pair of pants can't stop the smell of breaking wind, then what's a face mask going to do? And I've always borne that in mind, thinking, yeah, you know, this is so true. And I fell for it. And in the mainstream media, it was amazing that there was a narrative. You could see the narrative being developed. As a writer myself, as a person who writes opinion eds, I could see this narrative being developed amongst all the major newspapers. And good journalists who I respect, were falling into that narrative and coming along with it. And you could see that they were being pushed by a greater agenda. And it was great that Boris Johnson came on. And he took on his Churchillian pose and stared into the camera with that slightly concerned face and gave us the fact that we were going to be put into lockdown. And it was like he was going to be announcing the next world war. You know, I thought to myself, you know, wow, this must be serious. If this is happening, this must be serious. But I wasn't hearing any of the voices on the other side of it because I'd switched off Twitter. I'd switched off Facebook. I'd switched off Instagram. So I wasn't getting a balanced view. All I was getting was just the mainstream agenda, which was coming through thick and fast. And I was I believed every word I was told.
You weren't alone, Graham. There may well be people who are listening going, you fell for it. Oh, how it was so obvious. And there'll be others who will empathize and sympathize with you and say, yeah, I fell for it to start with. And if you are only getting one information source, or if all the information sources that you are digesting are saying the same thing, I have said this before, the Trump Russia Gate stuff, for a good 12 months or so, I believed every word that was coming out of CNN and MSNBC's mouth, because that was the only thing I was listening to. It was such a good story. It was the only thing I was listening to. And I feel incredibly foolish for falling for that. You know, and it only took a couple of weeks, 3 weeks of listening to that narrative that convinced me that Donald Trump was, Putin's bitch, as they were telling us. And so when they locked us down, and if all you did was listen to BBC, for example, then you would unfortunately have your mind adjusted into believing what they were telling. Right. We're going to go take a break right now, Graham. And then when we come back, you did, unfortunately, have the vaccine administered to yourself. And you have been harmed. And I just want you to briefly talk about that before we start going into some other topics with regards to the journalists and the mainstream media and how they have behaved. So stay right with us. We'll be right back on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan.
Akin Dev, filmmaker, doing the very hard job of looking into criminal networks of child exploitation online.
But if we're creating platforms that we know that children are going to be on, we have to ensure that we give them the same type of safety that we would in the real world. In the documentary, we use an analogy that if you're building a playground in the real world, you've got to go through a bunch of council regulations to make it safe. But if you're building a social media platform, you don't have to do any of that. The thing that I find really disturbing, though, is that, like, I've seen children that are no doubt under the age of 14, 15, performing, you know, some very kind of suggestive activity, and they have over 100,000 people on their live stream giving them money in the form of TikTok dollars. What society doesn't realise is that TikTok keeps half of that money. So I'm not going to call it out and say that it's a conspiracy that TikTok allows this content to prosper on their platform, but they certainly aren't doing anything to alleviate it.
McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk Radio, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's news talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. The Net Zero Con in action. Only those elites with private planes will be able to fly internally in France. There is no climate emergency. On air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to TNT. This is me, DD Denzel, on Digging Deeper. I'm talking to Graham Taylor, an author, a journalist, a talking head. There have been articles that have come out in the last 7 days, last week or so, one in particular from the Daily Express. More than 800 COVID-19 vaccine claims have been rejected by the vaccine damage payment scheme, and most of them on the grounds of causation. Urgent research is needed to investigate adverse vaccine reactions, but institutions fear rocking the boat, say scientists. And we've seen the fear of rocking the boat yesterday in the House of Commons as Andrew Bridgen once again stood up, gave a detailed factually correct, it wasn't even too protracted, a speech in the House of Commons, but moments before he even managed to utter a single word on this very important topic. Andrew, is he called Andrew Mitchell, MP? I will name you, sir. You got up and ushered out a good large proportion of the few remaining MPs. And so Andrew Bridgen effectively spoke to an empty house. I think this is disgusting. And it's an example of fear of rocking Bill Gates's and people like Bill Gates's boats. Now, Graham, you had the vaccine. You took it because you thought you was doing the right thing. Can you, in any way you want to relay it, tell the audience your experience of the jabs?
Well, yeah, I get a bit reluctant to talk about it because when the original video came out of my talking on the Jeremy Vine show, I got trolled by people who were, you know, saying, you know, what an idiot, what a dinlo, you know, why did you do it? Oh, you must be so thick. And I wasn't so thick. I actually wrote an article saying that the vaccine can't come soon enough. You know, I'll be there queuing up. And I was saying, I'm usually reluctant about taking vaccines, but I want to get it. I have an underlying heart condition, which is quite serious. My wife has an underlying health condition, which is very serious. And we were told that if we took this vaccine, then we'd be safe. I remember seeing the news broadcast where one woman said, if you take this vaccine, then COVID stops here and now. It stops. You can't pass it on. You can't get it. It's not going to hurt you. And I thought, well, these people are from mainstream media. They do not lie. And so I was first in the queue. I actually texted my doctor and said, I want my vaccine. And I eventually went and got it. And I remember sitting in the rugby club in Scarborough and getting the jab and thinking, wow, you know, I've done my bit. And people were clapping as you came out. There were those clapping you as if to say, wow, you know, how fantastic. And there was a great sense of camaraderie that we were the vaccinated. We were the ones who were going to stop COVID in its tracks. Uh-huh. And the next morning I woke up and my heart was maybe racing 147 beats per minute, which when you're lying in bed is pretty quick. It was in atrial fibrillation, which I'd had an underlying issue with that for quite some time. And I felt sick, dizzy, horrendous. I felt like I'd been run over by a bus. And that went on for quite some considerable time. Then I took my medication for the AF and it went away, got back to normal, did some exercise, did all the things I usually do to get rid of it, and it was fine, settled down. Went for my next jab. Next jab hit me, and woke up the next morning. I thought there was a jet taking off in my head. I had tinnitus, which I've had tinnitus since I was hit over the head with a brick in the police force. And not as loud as that, it was turned up to 11 on the dial. And it was horrendous. And that went on for weeks. In fact, I've still got it now as I'm talking to you. I've got my headphones in. And all I can hear in my left ear is a roaring sensation. Third jab came along, took that, woke up the next morning, couldn't get out of bed. It was as if somebody had wrapped up all my joints in concrete. Pain through my body. Diarrhea, vomiting, all the usual sort of things, and it was terrible. It took you know several weeks to get back to normal. Did some research. I'm now taking a string of different things to sort of get the spike protein out. Ivermectin, you name it. I'm on it. Zinc, vitamin C, the whole lot to try and bring that down because I think there's the stuff in that vaccine which is not very good for us. I'm going to annoy a huge section of your audience. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. You know, I'm a rational, sane person who believes that there's no such thing as conspiracy theorists. They're just people who are ahead of the news curve. And I think this vaccine damage is real. I think it's serious. And I don't know whether it was planned. I don't know whether it's part of some sort of 2030 initiative to destroy the planet, but it's very scary because I'm meeting more and more people. I had some people come to do some work on the house, fitting bathrooms, and on the Friday said, oh, we're going to go and get jabbed. We'll see you Monday. They didn't come back for weeks. And when they came back, I said, what went wrong? Oh, those vaccines. And these are fit Yorkshiremen, big Yorkshire men who aren't put down very easily, and yet they were taken out by the vaccine for a long time.
I mean, I've had a similar experience in my real world. There's a local cafe. They all went on a Friday evening vaccine session together, women of different ages who worked in this cafe, and most of them didn't make it. I think the cafe was shut down after that weekend. It did reopen, but that cafe has never operated properly. Some have passed away. I've had a friend, his missus, she had two jabs of the AZ. She had two heart attacks, but that woke her up. I had a student who lost his dad to the vaccine. These aren't uncommon occurrences. And yet we'll talk about Andrew Bridgen. I have one question first before we go there. What made you, because people are going to be thinking this who are listening. Oh, you had the first one, you got injured, or you had an adverse event. You went and then had a second. Okay, you can sort of, all right, you needed to have the two to get the full protection, as they were telling you. What made you go and have the third?
Because I was frightened of dying of COVID. Simple as that. I have a young son, and I thought to myself, if I do not have this, then I can die. It will kill me because of my underlying health condition. If I get a cold, I usually end up with pneumonia. So it's not fun.
Okay.
And I thought, I've got to sort this out. And like an idiot, complete dinlo, I did it. I just went backwards and backwards and backwards, going it, getting more. And now I feel a complete and utter fool. I feel really bad. I feel ashamed.
I don't think you should. That's easy to say when we look back in retrospect. You know, I could say that. Oh, I wish I woke up a couple of months sooner, and then I wouldn't have shared loads of videos of Chinese people dying just for the clicks. Yeah, because I was doing it just for the clicks. Yeah, I was like, wow, look, everyone likes these pictures of Chinese people falling over. It's great for my Twitter account. Yeah, so, you know, we all have... we can always look back and say we wanted to do things differently, but actually I don't consider you a dinlo, and I can assure the audience Graham was using much stronger language about himself in a private conversation that we had. I think people who have the public have been victims of this psychological campaign, this propaganda, which Himmler and the other propagandists of Nazi Germany could have only dreamed of in their wildest wet dreams to be able to achieve what the governments of the world have been achieved. And it's still going on.
The thing is, Darren, I have been an obedient servant of this country through my careers. I was a police officer for many years, and then I became an Anglican priest. And I have served this country and followed this country and supported governments regardless of Tory or Labour. I've thought, no, it's all for the common good. You know, this is obvious. And when you wake up, something happens in your brain, and suddenly I don't trust anyone anymore. I am now seeing things, and I'm thinking to myself, what is really going on behind this? I've just written an article for the Yorkshire Post about farmers in this country and the amount of government control that is being placed on farmers. And I've equated it to what's happened to the Dutch farmers in the Netherlands, who were having £21 billion spent by the government to seize 3,000 farms to cut down farting cows in a pursuit of net zero. Is that the real reason? You know, why are people so obsessed with this? Why are farmers in this country going bankrupt? You know, why are they trying to stop food production? And suddenly, it's not just about economics. I'm thinking, is there something more serious? Is there something more sinister behind this? And when you wake up, it's actually not a nice place to be.
No.
You're better off being a prole. It says this in 1984. Mm. The answer lies with the proles. And I was a prole for many years. And now I've woken up, I'm thinking, this world's quite scary.
It's incredibly scary. And Graham, once you see it, you can't unsee it. And, you know, I can assure you, if you started to, you know, dig a little bit deeper, to coin a phrase, into the conspiracies or non-conspiracies, because they've all sort of come true, you might find some deeply, deeply disturbing darkness in the underbelly of our world for the things we've seen.
I don't want to dig any deeper. It's bad enough being at the level I am. But it's like this morning. I live in an old part of the town where I live. My house is 400 years old. I have neighbours up and down the street. And ordinary people, ordinary people, people who don't use Twitter or go on conspiracy websites or watch conspiracy channels or listen to Russell Brand or anything like that. They are now having conversations with me, having read the stuff I've written in newspapers, saying, we believe that. There's something going on, isn't there? I've had a lady around this morning, you know, she came to deliver something for my wife, and she then starts talking about, you know, what's going on in America. And these are ordinary people. I was in a supermarket, a local supermarket, last Monday night, and the woman and I, on the checkout, she's always there on a Monday night, and she said to me, basically, it's all about WEF. And I went, what? What are you on about? I said, do you know what WEF is? She said, oh, I know what WEF is. It's not good. And these are ordinary people who don't go on conspiracy sites, who are waking up. We talk about the Great Reset. There is a great awakening coming on the other side. The Einstein theory, you know, opposites and powers and all that.
Yep.
People are waking up, and people are going to say, no, we've had enough. What politicians don't realize is they rule by consent. This is not a dictatorship. And we can get them out at the ballot box, and it's going to start the next election. These people are going to get the biggest shock, because there is a quiet revolution coming of nice, ordinary people who are saying, we have had enough. You're not locking us down. You're not locking us up. We're not going into 15-minute cities. You are not going to control us. And we are going to start and stand. And, you know, that's the state of the nation as it is. I think from what I'm seeing as an ordinary bloke, you know, who goes and about and does his business. I'm not into stirring up politics or anything like that. But people have had enough. We've been conned. And the thing is, the mainstream media now are latching onto this. You know, I'm talking to more and more journalists who are saying there's a wheel off. There's something wrong. We don't know what it is. We're being pushed the narrative. We've been told to say this and do that and what the ever. But I never expected being given permission to write an article for the Yorkshire Post saying, I will never get another vaccine. And they printed it. It had thousands of views. It's on there if you want to go and find it. You know, type in GP Taylor, Yorkshire Post, vaccine injured. It comes up, and they allowed me to say, to use my story. I didn't actually accuse anybody. I just told my story. And then I didn't expect Channel 5 to call me up at 7 o'clock in the morning and said, will you come on today and talk about Matt Hancock? You know, I sent a message to Jeremy Vine, and I was angry. It was late at night. I heard all this. I said, Jeremy, you know, I'm an angry man. You know, I've been conned. You know how much I have, you know, obeyed lockdown. And look at what he's done to me. And then at the next morning, 9:15, I was on the Jeremy Vine show telling 2 or 3 million people that there was a PSYOP taking place. Things are changing.
Why do you think we have, why do you think the mainstream media complied wholeheartedly with the narrative? And remember, it wasn't just the UK, it was a global affair. And there is a picture going around with Andrew Mitchell practically with his arm around a certain non-doctor computer software engineer who just so happens to have a lot of money. Why do you think the mainstream media complied so wholeheartedly with the mainstream, with the narrative being put out with regards to COVID? And why do you think there has been a sudden sea change in that narrative, particularly in recent weeks? We've got the Telegraph and the WhatsApp messages. The Telegraph, Daniel Hannan put out an article yesterday. The evidence is in. Lockdowns kill people. We've got the Express story on vaccine injured. Why do you think we've gone from this wholehearted comply with the narrative to now a change in the narrative that basically supports what the conspiracy theorists have been saying since 2020, Graham?
Right. I don't for one minute believe that the COVID virus was released on purpose. I think it was an accident in the Wuhan laboratory. I think it got out by mistake. And from then, I don't think China was open enough with us to say what it really was. So the British government panicked, world governments panicked. They didn't know what really was coming. They didn't know how it would spread, how it would mutate. And so the narrative was, we've got to shut down, we've got to lock down. And the mainstream media went along with this and pursued that because they thought that was the best thing to do. They didn't, they virtually mocked Sweden, who said, no, we're just going to keep on going and see what happens. You know, we're not too bothered about this. And Sweden has come out the best in all of this. And it's the case with the press that there always is a narrative, and it's a narrative which is shared across many newspapers and many platforms. And it closely runs along the lines of what the government wants us to listen to. And it's the same in any time of disaster or warfare. The press will say what the government wants. And it's as simple as that. And you'll find journalists who have had their editors refuse to publish certain things because it doesn't fit with a narrative. And that's a difficult thing for any writer in the mainstream media. You have to be able to say things without upsetting the narrative, but say things that people can then go on and research and find out for themselves what the truth really is.
Yeah. So you're saying then that basically the editors were dictating, because of government diktats themselves, what would be published and what wouldn't be published. And so writers were going along with the narrative, because if they didn't go along with the narrative, their work wouldn't actually get published, almost making them pointless as journalists during that period. Well, is that what you're saying?
Basically, there used to be a thing called the D notice, where the D notice could be applied to a particular story, and it was never covered. And it's the same. Why weren't the fact that in Friesland, in the Netherlands, Dutch farmers were shot at by the police? Why wasn't that on mainstream media? Why aren't certain stories on mainstream media? It's because they're not wanted to be on mainstream media, because mainstream media, you know, does control what we see. It controls the narrative. But now more and more people are leaving mainstream media and they're going onto sites and searching for truth. Just before lockdown, I used to watch Russia Today. I would watch Sky News and I would watch Russia Today. And I would try and see the two stories, the way they were being portrayed. And I would go for a common ground, because one was saying one thing, one was saying another. So you could find the common ground somewhere in the middle. And that's most probably where the truth lay. And sadly, Russia Today was taken off when the start of the Ukraine thing. I won't call it a war.
It's not a war.
I won't call it
special military operation. Ukraine.
Yeah, no, it's the great GoFundMe operation, I think it should be called, you know. But, you know, this is the state of our world. Don't blame the journalists. Don't blame them. They're trying their best. They will wake up. They are waking up. I know for a fact they're waking up. And so are people in the street, people on the council estates, people in the shops. People are getting sick of this. They're getting really sick of being controlled by the government. And it's more and more, you know. Why do we need 15-minute cities? Why do we need to pursue this ridiculous idea of net zero? It's just ridiculous. Why are we going to be locked up? Why are we allowing ourselves to be locked up? And you can see that, like the ULEZ cameras in London. Why? You know, I don't fly. I drive a vehicle which has got low emissions. I either like to cycle or walk, because it is good for the environment. Car fumes are bad for the planet. Fumes from aircraft are bad for the planet. And that's my choice. But I was doing this long before all this climate change stuff came out. I was just doing it because I felt it was better for me. Got a low carbon footprint, trying to live at one with the world, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't want it forcing down my throat. And I will stand up and fight for anybody who feels that they're being manipulated over this. And it is getting to a situation where we, as citizens of this country, are not being citizens anymore. We're becoming slaves, and that worries me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a firm believer, and many of the people who are listening and many of the people who work for TNT are a firm believer. But what we are actually witnessing is an attempt at the enslavement of the average person in terms of controls on where they can move, the freedom to associate, freedoms on speech, freedoms on bodily autonomy, all of these things that we have always took for granted and considered to be inalienable rights to ourselves. These things that can't be touched have all been attacked in the last 3 years. Now we're going to a break quickly, and there is one question I wanted to ask you, and this is about Jeremy Vine. You mentioned that you believe that journalists are now waking up. Maybe many of them were propagandized. Maybe they even propagandized themselves. And you actually said this to me, that you felt that Jeremy Vine himself might be waking up, to coin a term. Can you pass any comment on that?
Yeah, I'll pass the comment that Jeremy Vine, I've known Jeremy Vine since 2004. And he is an incredibly intelligent man. He is a very, very good man. He's a very honest and honourable man. And I know that some people might think he's a pariah and all the rest of it. Yeah, I've seen some of the tweets about him, but he's not like that. That man is an honourable gentleman, and I regard him as a friend. And yes, I do believe that he's a man who believes in evidence. And I think once the evidence starts to come out, which it will, you know, it will start soon, that we will start to see about the damage of vaccines and all the rest of it, I think that you will see a big change in not just him, but in a lot of journalists, that when presented with facts, because they're very scared of conspiracy theorists, but once they start getting the facts that the whole thing, lockdown didn't work, masks didn't work, that vaccines are killing people, then we will see a complete and radical sea change. But for all you people who are about to tweet about Jeremy Vine, bear in mind this. He's a husband, he's a father, and he is a really, really genuine person. So think about it before you tweet. Yes, he may have said things you disagree with, but he is an honourable person. And I think if presented with the facts, then his attitude will change. And I think he's the kind of man who is big enough to even apologise.
Oh, well, I was literally, you were reading my mind there, Graham, because he would need to come out and apologise for some of the statements that he made, in particular the one where he said people need to be, forcibly held down and vaccinated against their will to protect people.
Yeah, let's pick that one up. He says it was actually a question. He said, do people need to be forcibly held down and vaccinated? He didn't actually say that, because that would breach television impartiality rules. He was asking a question. He was being the devil's advocate. And I think it was Tory Boy who was on the program with him? That's his handle on Twitter.
I can't remember. Yeah, and I know who you mean. Andrew Pearce.
Yeah, Andrew Pearce. You do get asked this when you're on television. He and other presenters will ask you questions which are quite provocative, and they're doing it to get a balance. They're trying to get a balance. And he said, do you think people have to be tied down and given the vaccine? It's not his opinion. He's asking a question. And sometimes, and when I had my own radio show on independent radio back in the 90s, I had to ask people questions that were quite provocative. And I didn't even believe myself. But as you know, you have to ask things. And
yeah,
I think Jeremy's the same.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not here.
Don't tar the man.
I'm not here to be ad hominem. I try my best not to. Obviously, yeah. My opinion of Jeremy Vine is different to yours. But to be fair, I've never met the man myself. He's just said some 2-minute sound bites that have been promulgated over Twitter. And I'm like, whoa, I don't like that. And he was not alone in the mainstream media for asking provocative questions and making provocative statements with regards to the vaccines. And I hope he does wake up, and I hope he does apologize, and I hope he wakes up his audience. And if other journos are doing the same, I hope the same thing happens there, because
it's then the job of people like yourself, of people like GB News, of all these other talk radio, to actually get the facts out there. And it's important to have facts and not conspiracies or dreams about what might have happened. Let's go searching for the facts. Let's use hardcore, real evidence and bring the truth out, because that is important. It's not about what political side we're on. I'm very left-wing in my thoughts. I'm not a far righter. I'm very left-wing, verging on communist in my approach to what we should be doing now. And I feel that we've got to search for truth. And when we search for truth, when you find the truth, no one can stand against the truth. And it's our job to stop governments covering up and to get out there and get involved as deep as we can and make sure that the general public, the people who are sitting in council accommodation around this country and in middle-class houses, that they all get to know what's really going on.
And that is the hope of alternative media outlets like TNT Radio, where we are determined that we mandate the truth. Okay, we're going to a quick break now, Graham. And then when we come back, you have mentioned 15 Minute City. So I'll pick up on that, because my next conversation will be focused on Plymouth and the trees. So it'll be a nice sort of segue. So stay right with us on TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
It really is getting hard to believe the stuff that comes out today. I'm not going to even call it disinformation. I'll call it half information. The Washington Post, it used to be a great paper. It really did. I mean, I had a friend that worked for the Washington Post back in the 80s, and we would talk about their editorial board and how they always try to present the other side. But once again, the Washington Post is at it. They say the reason your allergies are getting worse in the United States is because of climate change, because springs are coming earlier. That is total unmitigated nonsense. All right. The last 15 years, there's been no significant change in U.S. March and April temperatures. In addition, it's amazing. We had a warm February in the United States. Guess what? The 5-day period running up to the first day of spring, one of the coldest on records, especially in the deep south. They don't even bother looking. It's the same story over and over and over again. Well, guess what? Maybe there are other reasons why allergies are worse, like what you're eating, what you're drinking, your general health. But no, it's got to be blamed on climate change. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather we got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Transhumanism is a political ideology and cultural movement and was defined in 1998 by Swedish economist Nick Bostrom, then a professor at Oxford, and David Pearce, a British philosopher. Dr. Miklos Lukas de Pereni, a Peruvian academic and expert in technology, writes that transhumanists proposed to use technology to alter human nature to produce human beings with super longevity, super intelligence, and super well-being. It rejects the Christian belief in absolute truth and that God created humans in his image and likeness. The advance of transhumanism has serious implications for personal privacy, data protection, and human rights, and big ethical, moral, and questions surrounding its applications. The Great Reset is promoted by German economist Klaus Schwab, CEO and founder of World Economic Forum, along with billionaire philanthropists George Soros and Bill Gates, and members of Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Finance. The Great Reset has been promoted by Schwab to harness the fourth industrial revolution, which he describes as a fusion of technologies that is blurring the lines among the physical, digital, and biological spheres. Those technologies include genetic engineering such as CRISPR genetic editing, artificial intelligence, AI, robotics, 3D printing, and quantum computing. Dr. Lukacs contends that the fourth industrial revolution is nothing other than the implementation of transhumanism on a global level. Further, the COVID-19 pandemic was manufactured by the world's elites as part of a plan to globally advance transhumanism.
If you're talking about it,
we have to stop being naive about the threat we face from China.
We're talking about it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to TNT Radio and the live chat. Graham has blown up. I sort of expected it would when we started talking about Jeremy Vine, and I have to, you know, have to respond to some of the comments. And I've picked the least aggressive of them all. This is from the Anti-Lockdown Alliance, somebody who I've got to know quite well over. And with regards to Jeremy, and this actually applies to a lot of the journalists, they caused fear. He fanned the fear, he steered the narrative, and that he is shameful. And that is the least, that's the one that I can actually say on here. Many, in fact, every single comment disagrees with what you were saying with regards to Jeremy Vine. And I'm afraid I have to agree with most of the comments because he did really, really push the fear, push the COVID narrative to an audience that was unsuspecting. And this applies to almost all of the mainstream journalists who, in my opinion, Graham, must have known. If they didn't know at first, it's felt that they must have known after 6 months that there was something seriously wrong. And by the time the vaccine come out, after 6 months of that and the death rates shot up, must have known. Surely their bubble
wasn't so small and impregnable that alternative information, the facts or the conspiracies, couldn't get in. So this is what's coming back from the live chat. So I've got to relay that to you, and I'm passing that back to you for comment, Graham.
That's fine. I did expect that. Don't hang me for it. I'm only saying what I feel about the man. But I will tell you this. If you're a journalist, you get fed the narrative and you basically get told what to do. You get told this is what we're going to do. A presenter of a TV program doesn't describe the editorial content. They get told what newspapers are going to cover. And it's a case of you're there, you're presenting. This is the narrative. This is what we're pushing. And at the time, it's what a lot of people thought was right. With hindsight and with history, we're going to find out that it was wrong. But don't shoot the messenger. They are just the messenger. There are people, as we all know, and as many of those people who are getting in touch with you know, there are powers and principalities at work who will go far higher than Channel 5, BBC One, and all the news outlets. There is an international narrative being portrayed, and sadly, the news outlets had to go along with it. And now that the facts are coming out, now that there is evidence, you will see there'll be a rearguard action. There'll be a lot of smoke and mirrors, but eventually the truth will come out. And I say to all these people who are getting in touch with you, slagging the Jeremy Vine off and all these other people, you start searching for the truth. You start bombarding the media outlets with the evidence. And I'm talking about evidence, not speculation. And you will see a sea change. You start telling the companies that there is a quiet revolution taking place in the hearts and minds of people up and down the country, and they will sit up and listen. And that's what's going to happen. And it will happen. And I know you're going to come on to this. It will happen because people in this country love freedom. And they love the idea that this country is the libertarian capital of the world. You know, we are so in advance. We are not a racist country. You know, we actually stopped slavery. Thousands of British sailors died fighting against slavery, which a lot of the African countries wanted to keep going because they were making a lot of money out of it. And we stopped it. And that was, you know, white men stopped it. And we love our freedoms. We like the idea that you can be gay and get married. We like the idea that, you know, you can say what you want. And we love freedom of speech. And once people start shutting us down, once people start locking us up in 15-minute cities, the residents of this country, the citizens of this country are going to get sick of it. And this is the biggest threat. I don't see why we should be, you know, trapped within 15 minutes of our home. That's not freedom. That's just a big prison. You know, you're not allowed to drive to one part of the city in Plymouth. You know, why are they chopping all the trees down on Armada Way? I know Armada Way very well. You know, I've done a lot of school visits as an author in Plymouth and love the town. And I saw the devastation. Why chop the trees down? Why is this idea that we should all, you know, walk everywhere? Why can't we go and visit my auntie in Scunthorpe or wherever? You know, we shouldn't be, you know, locked down. It's not right. And I think people will start to rebel. You know, already they're they're cutting the camera wires on ULEZ cameras, and it's the ordinary people who are doing this. They're starting to pull up the bollards in 15-minute cities in Cambridge and places where they're doing all this, and it will continue, and this quiet revolution will grow.
Yeah, I mean, you call it a quiet revolution. I have sort of revolution running through my veins these days, like I have throughout the COVID period and before that with what was going on with Brexit. Some may argue that the reason that we are being informed of, say, lockdown harms, vaccine harms, how the government have been lying to us and disinforming or misinforming the public through their media mouthpieces for years and longer. Some may say this is to deliberately provoke a louder, more violent response from the public, in which that they can clamp down on in the future to restrict our rights even further. Some may also say conspiratorially that that was always the intention, because as part of the Great Reset, it requires our governments to fall. We've got 2 minutes or 1.5 minutes left of the show before the music kicks in, and I get and I have to kick you off, Graham. How do you comment to that? Do you think that there's an intention as part of the Great Reset for our governments to fall?
No, because we live in a democracy. We live in a democracy, and we have the power of the ballot box. We also have the power to say one little word. It's called no. We don't want this. No. And that's all we need to say. We need a slogan, and it is no. You know, we've had enough. The British people have had enough, and we're waking up. And we're not going to tolerate being pushed around, being controlled, being manipulated by anyone. We are a free country, and it will remain that way. And I'm prepared to die for it, because this is what is the most important thing. I was born into a free country, and by God, I will die in one.
Okay, well said, Graham, and I feel exactly the same. And I do believe that we may end up having to fight for our freedoms, even in the UK, because at the end of the day, all freedoms ultimately must be fought for. Not fighting for your freedoms quite often means that what you have isn't freedom. Graham, thanks for coming on. I almost certainly love to talk to you again in the future. Good luck with your journalism and your writing and being a talking head. And to everybody else, we're going to be continuing on the subject with democracy. I've got Danny Bamping coming up. We're going to be talking about trees on TNT Radio.